It's the Harris Football Podcast with your host, Christopher Harris.
Welcome. Yeah, welcome in. Hey, I am Chris Harris. This is the Harris Football Podcast. I'll tell you, this football stuff. When even the ultra-reliable Tyrod Taylor fails to live up to expectations, makes you wonder which way is up. Yes, Mr. Taylor crashed back to Earth, but that's nothing compared to the weekend the NFL kickers had. Every time you turned around, they were screwing up. You had Josh Scobie getting things going last Thursday, getting booted out of Pittsburgh. The guy who replaced him in Jacksonville, Jason Myers, screwed up two game-winning kicks. Zach Hocker doinks a 30-yarder to win the game at the end of regulation Sunday night. New Eagles kicker Caleb Sturgis blew a short one before halftime that came back to haunt Philly, plus blew an extra point. Blair Walsh blew a 38-yarder that would have come in handy for the Vikings. Mason Crosby blew one at halftime to keep the 49ers alive. Oh, Kyle Brinza. I think he missed three kicks. Oh, man. Josh Lambeau missed the game winner for the Chargers, but the Browns, in the Brownsiest move imaginable, were offsides and gave him another chance. And four total extra points missed around the league on Sunday, too. Unless your name was Cairo Santos or Chandler Catanzaro, yeah, not such a good day to be a bootsman. Remind me again why we use kickers in fantasy football.
Today's kickoff.
Oh, Lord, Amber. Don't say kick. Well, it's Monday, so today is film review day. I'll look at Texans-Falcons first in honor of Devontae Freeman, who became the first player to have back-to-back weeks with three rushing touchdowns since LaDainian Tomlinson in 2006, which clearly means that Freeman, too, is going to the Hall of Fame. I'll also do a tape review of Vikings-Broncos, Philly-Washington, Chiefs-Bengals, with a little song thrown in for that one, and Jets-Dolphins. And then Matt Waldman of footballguys.com will come aboard, and Matt and I are going to break down Cowboys-Saints and Rams-Cardinals, and then we'll do a preview of Monday night's Lions-Seahawks game. We're sponsored today by our friends at Mott & Bow. I'm wearing my Mott & Bow jeans right now. And seriously, I've never had jeans that were so soft and fit so right out of the box. You don't have to break them in. And they look so much better than shopping mall jeans ever will. And what's great about buying from Mott & Bow is they have a free try-on program. You get two sizes to try at home, keep the one that fits, and send the other one back for free. I'm telling you, I'm wearing them now. I wear them all the time. They've even got khaki jeans that are perfect for business casual. You should really check those out. You should really check out all Mott & Bow jeans. They're a game changer for me, denim-wise. These jeans are already priced under market because they cut out all the retail markups. But the deal's even better when you go to mottandbow.com and use promo code Harris for 20% off. That's MOTTANDBOW.com. Promo code Harris for 20% off. Do it. Seriously. Buy some jeans. They look good.
Game Film Rewind.
Well, it's not often we start with a 27-point blowout like Texans-Falcons, but as I mentioned, it's not often that a running back has six rushing touchdowns in 2 weeks like Devontae Freeman. He's the unquestioned best story in fantasy after 1 month, which to me is incredibly surprising. What I see happening on tape is, well, the Falcons' passing game scares the bejesus out of defenses, and they're back on their heels. Then you throw in Freeman as a perimeter threat, and you got linebackers who are spread out and pretty paranoid. And, you know, what's crazy is that the majority of Freeman's runs the past 2 weeks have been pitchouts and sweeps, but his big runs, his touchdowns, all seem to come up the gut. That Atlanta line will do a nice job with a subtle little trap, and suddenly the Red Sea parts and Freeman is untouched right up the middle for a touchdown. I'm not taking anything away from Freeman. They're using him perfectly. He's a real battler. There's a play really late in the first quarter from this game where Freeman flares out in the flat and Matt Ryan's under pressure and kind of just throws it up. And Brian Cushing is right on Freeman, all over him. It's a jump ball. We're talking about a 5'8" running back against a 6'3" linebacker, and it's thrown right to both of them, and Freeman comes up with it. So what we'd really like to circle in on, what it's really difficult to circle in on, is what exactly is Devontae Freeman? Is he a smaller back who kind of improbably is heading for a Justin Forsett type season? If he is, he's a top 10 candidate every week among running backs. Or is he like a Leon Washington type, right? And we just can't see it because we happen to be at his absolute peak at this very moment. Leon Washington, you know, never scored 6 touchdowns in 2 weeks, but he did have huge back-to-back week efforts for the Jets a few times. But of course, was never durable enough to last as a feature back. And Trey Mason, you know, maybe there's some of that vibe there. Now relax. I'm not poo-pooing Devontae Freeman. I'm not telling you I definitively know what Freeman is or that, you know, no question, he is definitely Leon Washington. He is definitely Trey Mason. You know, smiling and starting Freeman on your fantasy team until he doesn't produce is a really good strategy. Whenever Tevin Coleman gets healthy, it's hard to imagine the Falcons taking a lot of workload away from Freeman while he's red hot. You know, the splash of cold water is, let me say, that someone named Teron Ward, whom I vaguely recall from Oregon State, also found massive rush lanes and was untouched a bunch as Freeman's backup on Sunday, which is my way of saying, if someone wanted to trade you a king's ransom for Freeman, I might also listen to that too, but I'm not telling you you have to sell him. Listen, if someone wanted to give you a bunch for him, I would at least listen. What else from this game? Julio Jones, obviously a bum. Why even bother talking about him? Leonard Hankerson scored a goal line touchdown while the game was still in question, added a short catch and long run just before the Falcons pulled their starters when it was a total blowout, while once again Roddy White had a catch nullified by a penalty. Though in this case, it was his own penalty. It was offensive pass interference. What's crazy here is I think White is still outsnapping Hankerson, but it doesn't seem to matter. Every week, Hankerson outproduces Roddy. I guess, you know, you just, Roddy doesn't seem audible and Hankerson seems startable. I don't have a great explanation for it. For the Texans, listen, I think we've pretty well established they don't have an NFL caliber quarterback. Ryan Mallett just can't throw straight. DeAndre Hopkins is a great player, and he's a little scary to trust in fantasy because, for example, he'd really done nothing in this game until it was 42-0 and the Falcons started pulling their starters. Of course, you keep playing Hopkins because he's really good. And finally, Arian Foster. Not a great return production-wise, to be sure, but very heartening to see that the talk of him playing limited snaps was total misinformation. I suckered in, you suckered in, we all suckered in. Total misinformation. Alfred Blue did get the second series of the game for Houston. Otherwise, to my eyes, it was all Foster. Kind of discouraging to see his own right tackle, Derek Newton, seemingly intentionally slap the ball out of Foster's hands for a fumble. And also tough to trust any Texans running back as a top 10 option right now. But hey, at least it was good to see Foster was back as a starter. Hey, a lot of us have been having big fun playing in Harris Football Listener Leagues on DraftKings, though this was a tough week for me personally against all of you. I may have cashed out 2 weeks in a row, but oi, Randall Cobb, Julio Jones, and AJ Green all failed to get in the end zone for me, dooming me this week. But I still had big fun, and you will too with DraftKings.com, the best place to play fantasy football on demand. You hear a lot about how DraftKings makes a new millionaire every week, and that's totally true and pretty amazing. But I think a lot of folks don't know that there are many ways to play on DraftKings, including getting a smaller group together and playing against friends, or even head-to-head. And of course, it's fun that you can pick and choose to start your team with literally any player you want, unlike commissioner-style fantasy, where you're locked into your team once you draft them. I play every week. I think you'll enjoy it too. Go to DraftKings.com, and if you enter promo code Harris, they'll give you a free entry. That's DraftKings.com, promo code Harris. Let's review the Vikings-Broncos tape, and the first point of interest is that Denver backfield. Well, the box score tells you Ronnie Hillman is the man, but of course, it all came pretty much on one run. A beautifully blocked pitch sweep around the edge that Hillman took advantage of for a 72-yard touchdown. I wrote a pretty in-depth piece for Vice Sports about the Broncos' offensive line and its failings through 3 weeks. And they mostly weren't great Sunday, but this one play was pretty much perfect. Ryan Harris, a journeyman who was filling in at left tackle and who is not related to me, made the crushing key block. I'd say C.J. Anderson got as well blocked a play once in this game and took it for 13 yards, whereupon John Lynch, the announcer, made all kinds of noises about how Anderson should have taken it to the house, which was patently ridiculous when you saw the tackle on replay. But whatever, you have to admit, Hillman helped himself here, at least to the point where the trend should continue to at least be a timeshare. I like the fact that the Broncos came out with Anderson split wide on their very first offensive snap and threw it to him for a long gain. But, you know, it was his only catch and we had dreams of him being a PPR monster. I don't think anything really changed here other than a few really well-blocked plays that Denver didn't have last Sunday night. But mostly poor offensive line play again. There are certainly going to be folks who like that long Hillman run and will start calling for CJA's benching. I wouldn't make roster moves based on that just yet, other than if someone wanted to give you a ton for Hillman. For the Vikings in a loss, Teddy Bridgewater showed guts. Man, he was getting killed all game by a truly fearsome Broncos defense that right now looks like the best in the NFL, but he kept wiggling out of trouble and keeping the Vikings in the game, and he trusted Mike Wallace more than he'd done previously and let Wallace make some plays for him.
Chris Harris cannot deal with the speed of Mike Wallace.
Unfair. Unfair, John Lynch. I can totally deal with it. Okay, well, no. So personally, no. That is no doubt true. I cannot personally run with Mike Wallace, but I absolutely can deal with the speed. No Charles Johnson in this game. So how about rookie Stephon Diggs making plays in the fourth quarter? Diggs just roasted Aqib Talib with a really sweet route. He came into the league supposedly pretty raw coming out of Maryland, but you can see him coming along pretty quickly. It was probably a one-week thing. We'll see if Johnson can come back quickly, but you know, put it this way, Diggs played way ahead of Cordarrelle Patterson. I might be looking at him as an upside bench play in a pretty deep league. Oh yeah, and I should mention in this game, Cody Latimer actually got on the field and instantly committed a holding penalty deep in his own territory on a good C.J. Anderson run. Goodbye, kid. Where to start with Philly against Washington? Maybe with the backfield usage. Matt Jones enthusiasts can probably take a chill pill, as the kids said in like 1987 or something, because Matt Jones didn't play very much in week four. Most notable thing he did was get tackled by his dreads by Fletcher Cox. He actually did get a goal line carry, which he failed to convert, and was presumably about to get another one when Kirk Cousins fumbled and accidentally rushed for a touchdown himself. But otherwise, Jones was stuffed and infrequently used. And honestly, Alfred Morris was stuffed most of the game, too. The Eagles are just super tough up the middle. The only thing that really worked in the run game was Chris Thompson out of the spread. Morris did rip off a couple big runs on Washington's game-winning drive. Just to remind us he's good, and he's not going away if Matt Jones' owners want him to. As for Philly's backfield, Ryan Matthews didn't entirely disappear after his good week three, and in fact, he started. But DeMarco Murray was out there a bunch more. I thought, here's a place where Chip Kelly kind of outsmarts himself. You know, Philly's down 6-0. DeMarco Murray hasn't really even played yet. He gets in there. It's a pretty simple trap play, and he rips off a 30-yard run. And the very next play, the Eagles go empty backfield, and Murray's on the bench. You know, it's not a huge criticism. Murray was in on the very next play and got a carry. But it does kind of feel like being too smart for your own good and symptomatic of what's bothering the Eagles in general. You know, Murray wasn't tired at that point. He wasn't hurt. Give it to him again, right away. Anyway, you know, again, this Eagles backfield's a rotation. Very tough to trust any of those guys right now. What else here? Nelson Agholor caught a long one down the middle, a really good catch. But the very next play, on an attempted reverse, he had a dumb fumble. I guess that's a dumble. At the end of the first half, Zach Ertz had a red zone touchdown, but it was called back because Aguilar lined up covering the right tackle. Brutal. And then, of course, Riley Cooper and Miles Austin scored the touchdowns. Of course they did. The only thing missing was Harold Carmichael coming out of retirement to vulture a score from a fantasy-relevant player. Frustrating day for Jordan Matthews. Another two drops that I saw. I don't actually think that the official scorer gave him even one drop, but boy, looked like two to me. And then he was open for a long touchdown. Sam Bradford overthrew him badly, and then he had to watch Cooper convert a long one two plays later. Three catches, 50 yards for Matthews. Yuck. And Jordan Reed suffered a concussion on Washington's final drive. And given how many of those that he's suffered, you're probably looking for another solution at tight end next week, at least. Next up, I was so inspired by Chiefs-Bengals, and in particular, so moved by Alex Smith's quarterback play, I composed a little number myself for you, which leads us to a quite literal
Harris's music digression.
I'd rather have Jay Cutler. I'd rather have Jay Cutler than Alex Smith. He is just a dink dunker. He's like gravy in your veins. Of tryptophan reminds you of sleeping. When the game is most crucial, L-tryptophan, it's fourth and long, a dump off ass. I hope you enjoyed that. Now you know I can play La Bamba on the guitar. All right, so, you know, doing Chiefs tape is, it's so reassuring, isn't it? like, you pretty much always get the same thing. Jamaal Charles is truly excellent. Jeremy Maclin gets a lot of targets. Alex Smith will get a delay of game after a timeout. Oh, and Cairo Santos will end just about every drive with a field goal, apparently. Bengals-wise, Jeremy Hill was back in the driver's seat for this one after not even playing 20 snaps against the Ravens. Are we in a Patriots-type situation with this backfield? I feel like the box score lies a little bit on this one. I don't have the official snap count in front of me early on a Monday morning, but Hill dominated while the game was competitive. Gio had his red zone touchdown and one other 16-yard run on a 3rd and 20. But basically, kind of went underused until the Bengals were up 11 with less than 10 minutes to play. Though, to be fair, on that drive, it was really close that he scored a second time. But the refs ruled him out at the, you know, 2-inch line or something, and Hill cleaned up for his third touchdown. I don't think my assessment of the Bengals running backs changed at all here. Hill probably can't be considered a top 10 guy. Gio's a factor, but Hill deserves the higher ranking. Andy Dalton played great. I mean, even last week when the numbers were good, he had that stupid kind of unaware fumble to give the Ravens the lead. He just made zero mistakes in this game. And sure, you know, his history tells you beware. You never know when a crushing performance is lurking to submarine you. I always try to be agnostic while watching the tape, and Dalton's tape was immaculate in week four, and it's not possible to argue otherwise. He is a fantasy starter right now. Brandon Tate had a long touchdown. Totally useless for fantasy, of course, but what's brutal is that literally two plays before, Marvin Jones had a long touchdown, wide open down the left sideline, and it bounced off his shoulder pads. Brutal. He did everything to make your fantasy day if you started him, except catch the ball. Finally, let's hit on Jets-Dolphins. Chris Ivory. Remember when someone leaked to ESPN, presumably from the Jets, that Ivory's workload might be limited this week? Still want to breathlessly read and believe all those reports we hear? Yeah, uh-huh. Ivory had 29 carries. Actually got vultured by Zach Stacy in the third quarter, but still scored one touchdown and looked like you expect healthy Chris Ivory to look. A vicious slasher. You know, like any running back, there'll be times where the holes aren't there or he doesn't quite see them and he can look bad. But unlike a lot of running backs, he's quick enough to squirt through openings, powerful enough to bully tacklers. Both the Jets and Dolphins are on bye next week, which should just about clear up any notion of Ivory being hurt, so lock him in your lineup for week 6. Brandon Marshall did everything he's been doing all year, except this time he didn't stupid lateral, so there's that. Fitzmagic, he's good enough to keep Marshall in clover, but definitively not good enough to be an attractive fantasy option, and not only because of a game plan's run heaviness. His throwing accuracy is just so variable. And Ryan Tannehill. You think the Dolphins are regretting that extension yet? Let's call it what it is. Tannehill has looked overwhelmed in 3 out of 4 games. It's like all you have to do is blitz him and he falls to pieces. What's stupid about it, about that, is all the Dolphins really seem to want to do is dink and dunk, and you should be able to do that when teams send their corners on blitzes. Miami's organization needs deodorant, and Tannehill probably needs to be disavowed of his only throw it 3 yards down the field mindset, which should in fact be reserved for my muse, Alex Smith. That series in the fourth quarter, when they were first and goal within 2 scores of the Jets, and had 9 plays first and goal before Tannehill finally threw the game-sealing pick, I mean, that was literally right out of the Alex Smith playbook, man. They never ran in that situation. Not once. I don't know if you're not going to run there. Not even once. Lamar Miller feels pretty useless right now. Though, no, stop asking me. You probably shouldn't drop him. You probably shouldn't drop him. Start someone else and wait for him. Kenny Stills made a couple plays instead of Rishard Matthews. Jarvis Landry was quiet. And, well, to large extent, saw some Darrell Revis at times. I don't know. This Miami offense is pretty untrustworthy, pretty constipated right now.
Today's guest.
And today's guest is Matt Waldman, our friend. You've heard him before on the program. And Matt, thank you very much for doing this. And I know you spent a long night reviewing some tape. So thanks for a few minutes to talk about a few of the games.
Oh, man, I appreciate it, Chris. It's always nice to be on. And, you know, I mean, this is the fun part about Sunday nights and Mondays is just kind of going over everything that happened over the weekend.
There you go. So you and I decided we were going to start out with Cowboys-Saints. It seems like when you're going to talk about the Cowboys, you always have to start with the Cowboys' backfield. Once again, a few huge runs early and nothing after. What do you think ails this running game?
Well, I think that part of the thing that ails the running game is that you don't really have a single back who does everything. So as a result, you have a back like Randall who can make some cutbacks for you, can do well in the open field, but he's not a guy that's going to get you those tough runs up the middle. Darren McFadden can sometimes do that depending on what they're going to run with him, but they're worried about, I think, whether or not he can handle a workload and stay healthy, as well as he's not exactly the most versatile back when it comes to the types of runs that you want to throw at him. So that means that the guy that is probably the most likely to combine that play into two, from those two players and even Lance Dunbar, who got hurt last night, if you combine those three players into one, you get Christian Michael. But Michael is that player who, of course, the Seahawks let go because he's not consistent in terms of his practice, his ability to kind of really put things together and stay consistent as a professional. And if he can kind of mature on that level and realize that he has to apply his craft in a way where he's really going to focus on it, then I think that they have a shot with him. But it also comes down to the passing game, being able to have that open man with Dez Bryant, you know, that deep threat who can, you know, keep the safeties out of the box. And that's where, you know, as the game goes along, the defense can kind of creep further downward as they gain confidence as to being able to cover Terrence Williams and with their top man. And as a result, it just compresses the field. Have you seen anything different there, Chris, in terms of, you know, kind of that Bryant dynamic and you know, in the run game there.
What's a bummer is just it's such a good offensive line and it's still playing really well and nobody consistently takes advantage of it. It's like Joseph Randall, if he could bottle what he does on the first series, oh my God, what a player he'd be. But it seems like after, you know, he gets a first couple of good runs and then boom, you know, it just sort of disappears. I mean, at least he's getting goal line looks. You know, Dunbar also got a goal line look, so maybe even that's not consistent. And of course, Christian Michael comes in on a big third and one in the fourth quarter, his first carry for the Cowboys.
Yeah, and it's set up, and it was set up for failure. I mean, it was just one of those deals where when you bring in a guy who hasn't even played at all before, and everyone knows who this guy is. I mean, you bring him in, they know it's going to go to him. And the Saints are able to be aggressive in the run game to the extent that they were. I mean, if you notice that when you look at this offense, Brandon Whedon's a pretty good red zone quarterback. I mean, he's played fairly well for a backup. He doesn't do a bad job in that range of the field. But between the 20s, being able to move the ball up and down the field without spreading the field into an empty set is a difficult task for them right now, because really Terrence Williams isn't going to beat your number one guy consistently. And then you have Witten, who's terrific, but they need to spread the field in order to have players run underneath Witten or work off of Witten to get wide open. And they don't have anybody outside of Williams who can get down the field consistently. Certainly Bryce Butler did that last night on a 67-yard pass, but it wasn't, you know, it was called back, and he is not really a speedster as much as he is quick early on, and he's also inexperienced. So there's a lot up in the air there. And with that ground game, if you don't have that complement to be able to, you know, just keep the defense from being too aggressive with the way that they fill gaps in the run game, then yeah, after the first series or two, they're going to get into the mode of being able to stop the run, and that's pretty much what happened.
Yeah, real quick before I move on to the Saints, do you think just that last drive should have saved Brandon Whedon's job?
I think it did. I mean, I think I think he played fairly well over that last drive, and as we saw, there were some plays that certainly that were made that earlier in that game that Whedon did a fairly good job of that just were called back. So yeah, I think that saved his job. I think that it keeps giving him another chance to continue here. I mean, and really, if anything, I think that the Cowboys are probably going to be looking at how do they spread the field maybe a little bit more often, because if they do that, maybe Randall might be a little bit of a better play at this stage. But then that goes to making adjustments that offensive coordinators don't like to do after they've spent months, you know, putting everything into place.
Yeah, I guess you're probably right, and maybe the big thing is that it's Matt Cassel would be the alternative, and that's not any better. So remember when we thought Mark Ingram was a terrible play in PPR leagues? he's on pace for 88 catches.
Yeah, it's fantastic, you know, and I think that one of the things with Ingram, I mean, you can see that he has gotten quicker over the past couple of seasons. Last year, he looked a little quicker. He's been healthier, and his confidence has gotten back. But I also think that one thing that the Saints have done, and tell me if you've noticed the same thing. I just think that Ingram is getting more touches and getting more continuity in terms of how he handles the ball. It's no longer one run and then off the field, or one throw and then off the field, and they rotate in two other backs, and then, you know, he's rarely, you know, this time it seems like he's on the field throughout a series. You know, maybe they take him out after every 4 to 6 plays or 3 to 5 plays, and it's less often a, you know, this type of switch where he isn't allowed to get into a rhythm. Because when you think about what he did great at Alabama was that he was their feature back, and he's not extraordinarily fast. He's powerful enough, and he's got some quickness, and he's got really good vision. But those skills really play into setting up defenders over the course of a game. And in order to do that, you have to get into the flow of what's going on, and that means being on the field. And I think a lot of times where committee backfields often have made mistakes in the past is they rotate guys in and out so much that they either become situational specific, and defenses can know what's coming based on which running back's there, or that the running back just fails to be able to set up linebackers or get a feel for how his front line is blocking the front line of the defense and who's really getting getting off the ball fast in that game and how he can take advantage of that or be more patient. And I think that they've slowly evolved to the point where they realize that Ingram just needs to be on the field a little bit more, and if they do that, they get rewarded.
And I guess obviously now we've learned it's never was a case that he just didn't know how to catch the ball. I mean, he clearly can, so
no.
That's good. It was brutal that he had that touchdown overturned on replay, 1-inch line, and then Kyrie Robinson comes in and vultures it.
Yeah, I mean, I know, and especially daily people were probably just freaking out over that one.
Brandon Cooks took a little bit of a backseat. It's like his most useful route this year consistently seems to be like the skinny post. He runs some shallow crosses too. You never rule out someone like Brandon Cooks getting free and making a play with his legs in space, but downfield just doesn't seem to be there, whether it's some limitation of his, probably some limitation of where Drew Brees is at this point. But I mean, when it's Willie Snead, are we supposed to panic a little bit now for fantasy?
Yeah, I think we are. If you were keen on Brooks, keen on Cooks being your guy, being your primary guy, you're in trouble. And here's the thing. I mean, this goes as far back as watching him really at Oregon State. I remember watching him against Ikpre Olamu, the Oregon cornerback, who's a physical player. And you could see really in that game and many others that Cooks was touted as being like the next Steve Smith type of player or an Antonio Brown player who's smaller, really quick, great in the open field. But the difference between Cooks and those two superstars is that he is inconsistent at making a play downfield when he's in tight coverage and the ball isn't thrown over their head. Now, if he gets a step on a defender and he can run past the defender and make the catch over his shoulder, he does that consistently well. But if he has to deal with someone making contact or turn back to the football and win the ball in any fashion, he's inconsistent at it. I mean, Marquise Lee was a guy who was a total bust at it, couldn't do it at USC despite all of the hype that was given his way, and you see him being reduced to a slot receiver at this stage. But Cooks is a guy that sometimes does it, but it's not enough to call him, you know, a really solid primary guy or a wide receiver one in fantasy. So as a result, the Saints do not have a primary guy that they can go to in this passing game who's, you know, third down and 15, you know, third and 12, being able to make those types of plays or even just go over top and consistently get the job done. So as a result, Willie Snead is a guy that's almost kind of an afterthought in this offense when it comes to how defenses have played him thus far. And so he's consistent, he's making plays, he's a good route runner, he's got some decent initial quickness, and he's got good hands. But you're getting basically a plus upgrade to Cole Beasley on the other side of the football there with Dallas with him. He's not going to get a lot of plays over 20 yards for you.
Yep, I agree. Not really a fantasy option. The moving on to Rams-Cardinals, I think the only way to start talking about this game is this way. Tavon Austin, great receiver or the greatest receiver? I'm just kidding. the story here is probably Todd Gurley, right? I would say, you know, his stat line is awesome. He really took over that starting backfield from Jump Street, almost lost a huge fumble deep in his own territory. The first half results were spotty, but overall, this was a serious emergence, right?
Oh, absolutely was, you know, and I think that I'm glad you brought up Austin, because I actually think that Gurley is the reason why Austin looked as performed as well as he did, and Austin may not be a bad sneaky flex play guy to pick up if he's available on your waiver wire. And the reason being is that now that Gurley poses such a threat in the middle of the field, now the Rams were able to work off that doing types of plays with screen plays or crossing routes or even long you know, deep crosses that Austin got open on, and a lot of it had to do with the threat of the run. When you have to account for Gurley the way that they do, it's going to open up other things, especially some of those quick hitting options on the outside when the defense is really focused on staying in the box. And Gurley showed some other things that were really helpful outside of just his terrific running, which was his ability to pass protect. You saw him being able to pick up some safety blitzes, being able to handle linebackers one-on-one. I've seen him at Georgia handle some defensive linemen one-on-one and hold his own against some guys at South Carolina who are, you know, got that kind of pro size and speed, even if they don't have that savvy. So you're looking at a for real back who is only going to get better. And one thing Jeff Fisher always knew how to do as a coach and how to scheme for and have his offense scheme for is get a back who can just pound the ball and be that serious every down 18 to 25 touch per game guy like Eddie George. And I've been joking around all offseason that Todd Gurley's nickname should be Eddie Georgia, because that's pretty much, you know, that's pretty much what Jeff Fisher has been looking for here. And you know, I mean, it's going to be exciting for them, because Nick Foles is just good enough with a running game to provide some decent fantasy production for you. I don't think it's, you know, maybe against the best teams, he's not always going to come up aces for you, but with what Gurley can provide, it's going to make his job easier. It makes Stavon Austin's job easier, and suddenly you have a big play threat, you know, in Austin, and then that makes the rest of the offense come to life. And so I would say, as long as Gurley stays healthy and as long as Foles can stay on his feet, this offense suddenly becomes a little bit more viable to start picking up players off the waiver wire and hold on to them and see what they can do.
Yeah, I mean, Todd Gurley was, he wasn't very good in the first half, but man, I mean, you give that guy a crease and holy cow. I mean, somebody that size should not be able to accelerate like that. And that's with a torn ACL less than a year ago. Briefly, I'll just say, you know, Chris Johnson played pretty well. You know, he's a mess at the goal line, but, you know, otherwise it's hard for me to imagine Arizona goes back to Andre Ellington once he actually winds up being back. But, you know, what I wanted to ask you about Arizona was, you know, watching this tape, I was kind of surprised. Do you agree with me? This is kind of a John Brown game for the Cardinals. Larry Fitzgerald wound up racking up some stats, you know, later in the game to make his line look good. But I thought Arizona really came out establishing Smokey Brown on the short stuff. They took a deep shot to him, which was intercepted. They gave him a reverse. I left this game feeling actually kind of okay about John Brown fantasy-wise. How about you?
Oh, I absolutely agree, and it would have been a point I would have made if you hadn't asked, because it's just like, it's one of those deals where earlier in the season, the first two to three games, you're looking at him, they're going deep to him early, often, and always, and he's drawing pass interference penalties, but he's not getting the catches. And in this game, yeah, they came right out and made the point of doing the short screens, some of the crossing routes, a lot of design plays, short sideline routes for him, and just get him established and continue to go short. And I think that's just another way of setting up the deep ball, because if the deep ball isn't working, well, let's keep throwing to him short and let him get yards after the catch, force defenders to play up on him a little bit more often, and will be less predictable, and then they can go deep with it. And I felt heartened by the fact that this game pretty much stated to me, John Brown is the passing game player that we are going through on this offense. He's the guy, he's our primary guy. You know, even though Fitzgerald's going to benefit from that, I think Michael Floyd will often benefit from that, and you're seeing him get more incorporated into it. But even with that double coverage post that Palmer tried to hit and turned into an interception in the end zone, even that tells you it's Palmer has supreme confidence in this young player, and that's his guy.
Totally agree. Thought it was, I mean, I'm probably going to still have Fitzgerald ranked a little bit higher because the flanker production's there, but man, I think the wide receiver two stuff is there for John Brown.
Monday Night Preview.
So let's talk a little bit about Monday night's game, Lions-Seahawks. We've got a little clarity on Marshawn Lynch being out. I've been saying all week, just automatically assuming that Thomas Rawls is the primary back feels like a little bit of risk. You know, that said, if you waited and you had Rawls backing up Lynch, you don't have much of a choice. I don't know. I guess you just hope that Fred Jackson remains the third down guy, even though to me, Matt, sometimes I feel like, okay, we're going into a national TV game. Let's maybe put a little more weight on the veteran and a little less weight on the rookie.
Yeah, I mean, I think that traditionally that would be the right thing to do, but then I think about Pete Carroll and the Seahawks and the fact that they would use a little-known guy selling shoes at Foot Locker and Chris Matthews as their insert him in the middle of the game and let him be the big man against the Patriots in the Super Bowl, and the way that they inserted Russell Wilson into that lineup as a rookie tells me that this may be the exception to the rule when it comes to teams that do that. I think that if they feel comfortable enough about Rawls and what he did, that he is, I think it's no worse than an even split. And I also think that the way Detroit's run defense is played, that this is kind of an even or neutral matchup for the Seattle running game. So I think that Rawls will get his opportunities. I agree that it's a risk, but I don't think it's going to be a complete bust where he ends up with five touches and then Jackson takes over and he has like a 15-18 touch game. I could see this being more of a game where maybe there's an even split where they each have somewhere between 10 to 12 touches or 12 to 14 touches if it's a lower scoring affair or one that's a tight-knit affair between Seattle and Detroit. So looking at it from that standpoint, Rawls has a little bit more to offer in terms of the juice in his legs. I would say at this stage of his career, he's a bit of a tougher runner. But again, what Jackson offers in the screen game, what he offers as a receiver, and just the veteran understanding of not trying too hard to make a big play, but just getting what's in front of him is something that is going to have that appeal, especially if Rawls, make some rookie errors, which, you know, players are prone to do.
Yeah. So we also have, going the other way, Joik Bell out as his knee issues seem like they've never really gotten better from the surgery and from training camp. And so here we go. Amir Abdullah. Again, if you waited, I think you're using Abdullah, you're not going to get clever with a Zach Zenner or a Theo Riddick, right?
I don't think you are. I mean, I think that unless you're in a league where you have, where you have multiple flex plays, you can have, if you have more than one flex play opportunity, Zenner or Riddick might not be a bad play, only because Zenner is going to get more touches. They really like him. He has been consistent, and he's a talented player who, I've talked about a good bit this summer as a player who could take over for Bell by the time the season is over. He has that kind of quickness, skill as a receiver, power to be able to do the job. And I think he has the vision as well. But I think that really you're going to see you're probably going to see a 50-50 split or I would say it's going to be a three-way split, but I would say that maybe two-thirds of those carries are going to be, probably about three-quarters of those carries are going to be split between Abdullah and Theo Riddick in the passing game, as well as with the run game more towards Abdullah. But I would say the touches on the run game will be split between Abdullah and Zenner, and with more short yardage going to Zenner. But then the passing game will be between Abdullah and Riddick. So Abdullah is probably your safe play. If you don't have him and you can get, and you just needed somebody, then Zenner is that guy that's like your total swing for the fences type of player. But I would say that's an extreme boom bust call. He's a guy that you might want to have as a preemptive add to your league, just so that you can hold on to him if you need running backs and you just want to cycle through your waiver wire and hold on to a guy for a couple of weeks to see how it develops, because he has that kind of talent. But Abdullah is a terrific talent. The problem is the Lions haven't figured out exactly how to use anybody on that offense right now. If you look at it, it seems like this is a team with great athletes who could be a fast break, high tempo team. and they're bogged down and trying to run these somewhat elaborate plays that don't always work very well. And they're not, you know, they're not even attacking downfield well with Calvin Johnson at this stage. So it just seems like an offense that is really out of sync right now. I don't really like the Detroit running game in this matchup, but if I had to go with anybody, Abdullah gives you the best chance for probably for touches as well as big plays.
I agree. And yeah, I mean, I don't love the scheme, but I particularly don't love the offensive line. It's just not playing well. Hey, Matt, thanks for doing this. It was very nice of you to take a break from the, I know you're doing a ton of film watching today, as am I. I hope folks will follow Matt on Twitter, at Matt Waldman, W-A-L-D-M-A-N. I think you just heard. He knows his stuff. He is a film watcher. Matt, thanks for doing it.
Hey, man, my pleasure, Chris.
And that's it. That's our show. Thanks for listening. If we didn't review tape of the game you were looking for, fear not. Tomorrow's show will feature the remainder of the game film. In addition, my old pal Jim McCormick will come aboard and we'll discuss the waiver wire for week 5, which free agents you have to have. It's a must listen. If you need a little Monday night luck for your fantasy squad, there you go. I just sent it to you, just gave it to you. You should be all set. Good luck. Enjoy tonight's game. And I will talk to you tomorrow.
The Harris Football Podcast's opening theme is Under the Gun by Apex Manor. The end theme is Tooth and Claw by OU Villain. Subscribe to the Harris Football Podcast on iTunes and never miss an episode.